This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. There are things difficult to understand unless we've experienced them ourselves. And when we hear statistics about troubles other people are having, it's easy to write them off as, well, just statistics. So here's the way one parent put it when she found herself experiencing something she never thought she would. Imagine you're outside, maybe at a park or a playground, with your kids. A sudden storm appears, and before you can take cover, lightning strikes one of your children. You rush to a hospital. How long would you expect to wait to see a doctor? What if you were told, sorry, but the soonest we can see your child is maybe a month? Yet, that's the situation many parents say they face when a crisis of mental health strikes. But now in Virginia, it looks like help for children could soon be coming a bit faster. Some of those behind this improvement in mental health help for kids will be here to explain right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. If you see a child in pain, how fast do you want help made available to that child? That, in essence, is the basic question we will be addressing for the full hour today as we examine efforts to improve mental health crisis help for children across the Commonwealth. And you're most welcome to join the conversation at 888-WMRA-TALK. How much of a priority do you believe our medical and healthcare systems should be giving to children? Should the priority be different for mental illness compared to any other kind of emergency? 888-967-2825. A little later in the program, we'll be talking with a former special education teacher who now helps decide how much funding goes into what kind of state programs. But we begin with two others who have also played a part in getting state government to give us somewhat higher priority to children in the years ahead. With us by phone, a parent who became an advocate for mental health reform after her young son began to have problems. And to protect her son's identity, we're going to be addressing his mom by just her first name, Shannon. Thank you for making time for us.
Oh, thank you for letting me join.
And here in studio, it is a pleasure to welcome back the Director of Policy Research for the nonprofit Voices for Virginia's Children. Her name is Margaret Nimmo Crow.
Hi, Tom.
Good
great
to see
be
you again,
here.
Margaret. Shannon, tell us a little bit about your son. We're going to call him Drake for the purposes of this conversation.
He's 6 years old. He has high-functioning autism, ADHD, and also a mood disorder. But he is very bright. He's about 4 feet tall and 52 pounds, so he's a good-sized child. He has beautiful big brown eyes with long eyelashes and brown hair. He's biracial, so he's light brown complexion. His favorite food is tacos at the moment. And he loves to build with Legos. He builds elevators and stores and things with Legos, and he loves his iPad. He's very proficient with computers.
So and I've sweet, heard sweet people guy. Say about your son, Drake, Shannon, that much of the time he's just a very sweet child with a great big grin on his face.
He's very sweet, and he wants to please. He's loving, loves to be hugged and touched. You know, that's his natural state.
And when did you begin to notice that he was having problems?
Well, when we lived in Nebraska, at 18 months, I did notice that he had a type of speech delay. So he did get early intervention services for speech. Then at 2, I noticed some more problems. He was very hyper. And at 3, he became aggressive. He started throwing things at me, yelling, arguing, you know. Bedtime, I dreaded bedtime. I just never knew it was going to happen. So he was throwing chairs at daycare. He just became sort of a different child. So when he was 4, we moved back to Virginia for better services, and he was diagnosed when we moved back to Virginia.
And I understand that you had a suspicion that something further was wrong than what doctors were telling you for the first couple of years.
Absolutely.
Since the time of the speech disorder showing up at about a year and a half old.
Yes.
But doctors that you saw in Nebraska kept telling you that he did not have autism?
Absolutely. When he was 2, I had him tested at the best hospital center I could in Omaha. And I was told he just had a speech delay and that he would be fine and bring him back in a year. And so pretty much all of it would go away. And I never believed that. You know, so, you
so
always
at the
your
age
gut.
Of mm-hmm. at the age of four, you're now back in Virginia. You're mm-hmm. seeing new doctors. And is autism the first diagnosis that you get?
Yes, I get the diagnosis of mild autism and moderate ADHD. That was the first real diagnosis we had for him.
And that was a bit more than 2 years ago. What difference did that make, getting those diagnoses and getting, I take it, treatment for those disorders?
Well, when you have a name for a diagnosis, I mean, it can focus you on what to treat, because the goal is to treat and to treat early. So once we had a diagnosis, I knew where to focus my energy on to help my child.
I think that's so important. It shows you the persistence that parents really need. And I think something that Shannon just said is so important, to trust your gut. Parents are the experts on their children, or whoever the caregivers are for a child. They know what's normal, what's sort of baseline for their child, and they can really monitor what's changing. And so I think that that's a really important thing for people listening to consider, is that you know your own child the best. And if you're not getting satisfactory answers or treatment, you just have to, unfortunately, keep trying until you find someone who's willing to really pursue it with you.
Shannon, I understand Drake is about 6 and a half now?
Yes, he is.
And there was recently a crisis. Tell us about that.
Yes. In school, for the last few months, we noticed him changing again, and he was currently on medication for hyperactivity. He started behaviors again of hurting others, like he would throw things at teachers and students. He would trip them, push them, you know, things that were just out of his nature. He almost got suspended for charging at a teacher and throwing a pencil at her. So we definitely knew something was wrong, and then he had some self-injurious behaviors, jumping off desks, jumping off the back of sofas. It was just a really scary time. So we took him to the emergency room of a hospital. The first one would not admit him, even though he was manic. The second one did, and they had one bed left. And they, from the emergency room, put him in a police car with us and drove him to the center. And he took advantage of that one bed and got treatment for 12 days.
I think this just shows how difficult it is to access services. The fact that there had to be a police car involved, for instance, that can traumatize a child right there who's already experiencing acute trauma. The fact that the first hospital wouldn't admit your son, the fact that there was only one bed left. What if you'd been, you know, a few hours later and that bed had already been taken? Mm-hmm. These are all things that wouldn't happen if we were talking about a physical disorder or a physical injury or illness. But these happen all the time to families who have kids with mental health problems.
Shannon, I understand that you and Margaret Nimmo-Crow are among those who succeeded in getting at least a modest change in Virginia funding for the couple of years ahead that relates to the kind of medical services that you and Margaret think are very necessary. I'm going to ask you about that in a moment. But first, just for the sake of anybody who's tuned in, I want to let you know that Margaret Nimmo-Crow is Director of Policy at the group Voices for Virginia's Children. Plus, we have by phone from Central Virginia, Shannon, mother of a six-year-old diagnosed with a variety of mental health challenges. Basic question we're looking at this hour to you who are listening: what priority do you think should be assigned to getting medical care to children who need it? And should that priority be any different if the medical care they need is for mental illness compared to any other kind of illness? We have phone lines open for you at 888-WMRA-TALK, 888-967-2825. Shannon is only going to be able to be with us for just a few more minutes, so if you have a question or comment specifically for her, please do call us right now at 888-967-2825.
Well, Tom, I've been on your show several times, and for the first time, I actually have some good news to report, and that is that the General Assembly recently approved a little over $3 million over the next 2 years for just the kind of services we've been talking about that we need: community-based crisis intervention services for children who are experiencing a psychiatric emergency. So I'm pleased that we're making some progress. Virginia is heading in the right direction. There's going to be money available starting July 1st for certain regions in the state to be able to beef up what they already have or put in place things like a mobile crisis team. this would be, imagine, Shannon, if you had had the ability to call a therapist at whatever time this all started, who could come to your house, come to your child's school, and intervene right there, help de-escalate the situation, evaluate the needs, and bring in whatever resources you would have needed. You might have even been able to avoid that hospitalization.
Oh, absolutely. That would have been a lifesaver, a mobile crisis unit. And, of course, you know that there is a shortage of child psychiatrists in the Central Virginia area and across the nation. The first crisis he had, we had to wait over a month to see a child psychiatrist. So a mobile crisis center or a pediatrician who was trained in mental health issues would have definitely helped. And as far as outpatient goes, a psychiatrist has taken pity on him because her waiting list is 6 months. And she has made an appointment for him to come back in July. And, you know, that's the reality that we face as parents with these shortages of services. So I'm thankful for all your work.
If I understand correctly, the original proposal that Voices for Virginia's Children and other advocacy groups put forward at this past year's General Assembly session was for two types of care and for funding in the range of $20 million over 2 years. You just mentioned that you're getting funding of a little over $3 million, so a lot less than you originally asked for. But Margaret, what are those two types of care?
Well, it's really important. We asked for two of the most important types of care that are the most lacking. We asked for funding for better access to child psychiatry. We need to be able to pay child psychiatrists to see these children. There's a shortage of psychiatrists, but there are also some out there who the public mental health system is not able to hire because there are simply no resources to do so. And that leads to enormous waiting lists, months and months long, for these kids. Obviously, if you didn't start in crisis, by the time you wait 12 weeks to see the psychiatrist, you're likely to be in crisis. So we're not helping the kids at all by having those waiting lists. So that was one piece of it. The other part of hiring these psychiatrists that Shannon just mentioned that's so important is that we're not ever going to have enough child psychiatrists. A lot of times it's pediatricians who are trying to treat things like ADHD and depression on their own, and they really don't have the training to do so. But if we can carve aside some time from child psychiatrists throughout the state who can train these pediatricians and other frontline workers so that they know better how to treat some of these mental health disorders, and the child doesn't have to wait to get in to see a child psychiatrist. So that was one piece of our proposal. The other piece was for these mobile crisis services or bricks and mortar crisis stabilization units, places where a child could go who perhaps was in foster care or needed to get out of their home situation on a really short-term basis, a few days, to stabilize the situation before going back. And so we did start off with $20 million, mostly because we really wanted to educate lawmakers about the scope of the need. There is a shortage of these types of services all over the state.
You know, there was a fair amount of testimony that this was not a made-up figure, that this was really the amount. $20 million was what was needed to make reasonable progress towards the things that you're just talking about. And Shannon, I understand that you have recently become, including during this past General Assembly session in Richmond, an advocate for better mental health care, both at the state level, and that you've traveled to Washington some to talk with national lawmakers. What has that been like for you, who I think your work in the past has been primarily as a daycare teacher, to step up to that level of advocacy?
It actually feels empowering because you feel like you're just a parent in a sea of other parents who need help. And so when you're able to talk to people and tell your specific story and have people listen, it empowers you and it makes you move forward and realize that you must advocate for your child and that you can do it.
I think it's just so important. I know it's difficult to get out and tell your story about something so personal and something so scary about your child.
So we're also going to ask people who are listening, if they have a story, to call us at 888-WMRA-TALK. But Shannon, before you go, we've got 30 seconds left for you. When you go to bed at night, what do you wish for most? What's your dream about the future?
For my child to get the services that he needs now so that he can be a functional, independent adult and not be afraid of life, but to be able to enjoy it, and for other children like him as well.
Thank you so much for making time for us. We're going to return here on Virginia Insight, talking about what priorities we should have for children who need help and whether those priorities should be any different if what they need is mental illness help versus any other kind. We'll be back in a bit more than 1 minute. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Here with me in the studios of the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities in Charlottesville, Margaret Nimmo Crowe, who is Director of Policy at the group Voices for Virginia's Children, as well as coordinator of the Campaign for Children's Mental Health. And joining us now by phone, a former special education teacher who is currently in his second term as a state of Virginia lawmaker, Republican from Stanton, member of Virginia's House of Delegates, Dickie Bell. Thanks so much for making time for us.
Thank you, Tom. Pleasure to be with you.
Delegate Bell, in all those years that you spent helping children with special needs as a teacher, what did you come to understand about those needs that maybe many of the rest of us don't yet get?
I think maybe the biggest thing, Tom, was that I found out early on, and it became my motto, that every child was gifted and every child was at risk, and that we needed to focus on ways to educate children who may learn differently and stop treating them as children who couldn't learn or who couldn't be taught. Because when I first got into special education, I think that was a problem. I think we had written off some students, and there were some that were falling through the cracks. And so it's really the reason I became a special ed teacher. I was a happy social studies teacher until I complained about some of the things that were happening in special education, and somebody told me to stop complaining and do something about it. So that's what I tried to do.
Dickie, we just had on the phone line a few minutes ago a parent who I suspect you know. We're identifying her only as Shannon from Central Virginia, and her son Drake, who has been diagnosed with a variety of mental illness problems, including high-functioning autism and ADHD. One of the things that she told us is that she's had any number of experiences of trying to get her child help, and it's just not available. And most recently, when he was in crisis, they took him to a hospital, and the hospital said, sorry, we don't have a bed, we can't admit him. And they felt very fortunate that when they got in a police car and were taken to a second emergency room, that that particular locale, that institution, had one bed open, and they were able to admit the son and get treatment for him. How common a story is that in your experience?
I'm afraid it's all too common, and I'm sure that my good friend Margaret can validate that. It's a problem that just continues to become worse. We don't have enough beds. We are not able to administer the kind of treatment that these young people need. We're working on it. We made some advances. We made a little progress this year in the General Assembly, but it is it's a very common problem, and it's a growing problem, and it really, I think more than anything else, Tom, it sort of sets us back. Every time one of those cases rears its ugly head, we sort of lose ground in what we're trying to accomplish.
Well, I think, Delegate Bell, you know, we were just talking about the importance of parents advocating for their children and for the whole system, and Shannon's such an effective advocate. It also takes legislative champions, and you are one of our legislative champions this year. And I think part of it is because you understand that it's not just a matter of the beds, although we need beds. Certainly, we don't want any of the ones we have to close. But it's those community-based crisis services and those intensive in-home types of services that can really treat children at home and while they're still going to their regular schools. And if we can have more of that type of service, hopefully we won't need to send so many children into the hospital.
I agree, absolutely. That's what I would like to see happen. I hope we are successful in making that happen. You know, increasing the number of beds is one short-term solution, but it's not a remedy. Early intervention, crisis intervention, and addressing these problems in an environment where the children are most comfortable, which you would expect would usually be the home, are much more important than just arbitrarily increasing the number of beds, I think.
Absolutely. And we're excited as advocates, and I know the entire children's mental health community is excited about the opportunity that this $3.3 million is going to afford the system. Certain regions of the state will now be able to have therapists who can go out to the home and respond in a crisis. They will have more child psychiatry hours. They will have someone who's available to advise those clinicians who go out to someone's home in a crisis and help with the medications or see the child on an immediate basis so the family doesn't have to wait. And these are all things that were made possible through your advocacy in the General Assembly with your colleagues.
Margaret, yeah. You've said a couple of times in some regions, and we certainly are in hard times as far as funding new programs. So I'm sure that you are grateful for the
Absolutely.
$3 million over 2 years, but that's still $17 million less than you had originally said was needed. Tell us a little bit about what regions. This sounds like it's more of an experimental program than a program to blanket the state with new services.
Well, it is, and that's the way we start things a lot of times in Virginia, and it's a good way to start is to have pilot programs so you can demonstrate the effectiveness of what you're trying to do before you roll it out statewide. And certainly crisis services and child psychiatry are needed throughout the state. Shannon and her family live in a highly populated urban area. Imagine the rural parts of the state and how difficult it is for people there to access services. So it's certainly needed everywhere, but this is a start. We don't yet know which parts of the state are going to benefit from these dollars. The money will flow through the State Department of Behavioral Health and Developmental Services, and they are in the process of developing guidelines. It would be my guess that different regions would apply for the funding, but we don't yet know who's going to benefit yet.
How does Virginia compare in terms of getting this kind of help to kids and families who need it, compared to other places in the country?
You know, there's some areas where we're actually better. For instance, Nebraska. To hear that someone actually moved to Virginia to access our services is pretty impressive.
I think that was Shannon's story.
Right. I think that our neighbors to the north in Maryland certainly have figured out some of these things before we have. They also have, to be fair, a smaller geographic area to cover. But I think there are states that we can really model after who figured out how to do this type of mobile crisis service, how to keep more kids out of the hospital and out of residential treatment. Maryland's one. Kentucky's actually another one. So we don't have to go too far to find better examples.
Delegate Dickie Bell, when you went to your colleagues, the 99 other members of the House of Delegates, and maybe some of the 40 members of the state Senate, and said, look, this is important. We need to get children who are in crisis help, and we can only do it if we spend money on it. What kind of response did you get, Dickie?
Well, I think there were a number of people who are very sympathetic. As we do a better job of educating them on the crisis situations that we have, we've gained some support. Even in my 3 years there, the support has grown. We happen to be in one of those economic patterns where everyone's cautious of what we spend, particularly in programs like this. But my argument to them, Tom, has always been, you know, we decided in Virginia some 35 years ago that we were going to deinstitutionalize and we were going to put people in their communities and we were going to provide treatment for them. And we did most of that except providing the treatment. And we've never really produced in terms of the funding necessary to do these things. They're expensive services. Yes, of course they are. But if we're going to fulfill our promise that we made with deinstitutionalization or the crisis intervention that's so badly needed today, then we've got to find a way to pay for it. And I don't believe that there's one instance, I don't think anybody can give me one instance where once we made something, a spending priority, that we didn't find the money for it. So what I've tried to do with my colleagues and at every level and since I've really been involved is to alert them, educate them, make them realize that this is a priority, that this serves the Commonwealth in a great way. If we can have interventions and we can provide some treatment, and we can spend money. We're really getting a lot of bang for the buck. And you hear that from politicians all the time. Well, we're not getting anything for our money. Well, we're getting something for it here. And this this $3.3 million, as important as it is, I can assure you that Margaret and I and a lot of other folks both wish it was 10 times that. But it is a start, and I think I'm encouraged by the start, and I'm encouraged by the support that we saw. It does take a lot of lobbying. It does take a lot of talk because there are so many places to put a little bit of money. But I think we're making progress. I really do.
With us by phone, Republican lawmaker representing the House of Delegates 20th District, as well as a former special education school teacher, Dickie Bell. Here with me in the studios of the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities, Margaret Nimmo Crow. Ms. Crow herself is a former chair of a regional community services board, the agencies in charge of supplying mental health services at the local level. Today, Margaret serves as director of policy for the group Voices for Virginia's Children. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. We only have Delegate Bell with us for a few more minutes on the phone line. He's actually talking to us on his cell phone from Lynchburg, where you were with the governor for a while today, I take it. Dickie?
That's correct. Yes, there was a governor signed some bills today that actually they were bills lifting some of the unfunded mandates and expenses on local governments.
So that's going to be for another show. Since we've only got you on the phone for a few more minutes, let me stress to people listening that if you have a comment or a question about this issue of how much priority should be given to getting help for children in crisis, and whether you see that priority as being any different if that health crisis is mental illness or some other kind of illness, we'd really love to hear from you at 888-967-2825. And Margaret, I know that when we talk about this kind of issue, there are lots of people listening who have experiences, who have a child themselves or know of a child in their neighborhood where there has been a struggle with some sort of mental illness. And they hesitate to call. They hesitate to post on Facebook because of something that may be a little bit difficult to understand. I mean, if we were talking about children with broken legs being rushed to a hospital,
right, we would all understand that.
And the hospital saying, sorry, we can't treat you, we'd be getting dozens of people's opinions coming in on the phone.
Sure. There'd be outrage. Unfortunately, Tom, there's still such a stigma around mental illness, and particularly children's mental illness. Unfortunately, a lot of times parents actually get blamed when their child has emotional or behavioral health problems. And that's so counterproductive. As we talked about with Shannon earlier in the show, she had that gut feeling. She knew that the answer she was getting from the medical professionals were not right because she knew her son the best. And that's a message I would love to get out to parents and family members of children who have mental health problems. You know your kids the best. And although there is a stigma sometimes, it can be scary. The best way to get help is to speak out and really speak up for your child. And if families are interested in learning how to get engaged in the broader advocacy effort, I would love for them to go to our website of the Campaign for Children's Mental Health. That's www.1in5kids.org. And I'll tell you, Tom, the reason we named it 1 in 5 Kids is because those are the national statistics for kids with mental health problems. So don't feel like you're alone.
At some point in a child's life between the age of birth and 18, 20% are going to need some sort of mental health treatment.
Absolutely. And the disturbing thing is only 1 in 5 of those kids, only 20% of those kids are actually getting the treatment that they need. So there's a huge unmet need out there. And obviously when the situation rises to the point of a crisis, your child is hurting himself or others, you have to do something. But there's all kinds of unmet need. And I just hope that families would understand they're not alone. You can connect with other families at the campaign. And if you'd like training in how to speak out and be an advocate like Shannon, we'd love to get in touch with you. That would be great.
So if there is a story that you know of a child needing help, what happened with that child, and you'd be willing to tell us about it, we do have phone lines open at 888-WMRA-TALK, 888-967-2825. Or you can post to us on our Facebook page where we are listed as Virginia Insight. We're speaking with Dickie Bell, Republican delegate from the Stanton area, and Margaret Nimmo Crow, who is the director of policy for the nonprofit Voices for Virginia's Children. Speaking of stories of what people go through, Margaret, I understand that there's something that happened in Dickie's home area near Stanton recently that involved an 8-year-old child?
Absolutely.
Tell us about that.
And Delegate Bell, I just have to say you understand the situations with these families so well, and this may even be a story you're familiar with. A little boy who I'll call James, he's 8 years old. He's been diagnosed with bipolar disorder. He comes from an intact family, working parents. They have insurance. They have a younger daughter. But unfortunately, despite all of that, they were not able to get the help that they needed for their son, James. And he was hospitalized in March. He actually attacked two teachers at his school, punched them in the stomach, and was suspended. So the parents did what they thought was the right thing. They went to the child's psychiatrist. The child was still in a rage, was destroying property in the psychiatrist's office, really acting out, and the psychiatrist said he needed inpatient treatment. And so they sent him to a hospital. He stabilized and came back home, but unfortunately, 2 months later, they were right back in the same spot. Nothing had changed in terms of the treatment they were getting at home. The transition back from the hospital can be very difficult if you don't have new plans in place to prevent a crisis from escalating again. And I know, Delegate Bell, you're familiar with the numbers at the Commonwealth Center for Children and Adolescents in Stanton, the hospital that's in your district. It's
yes.
The last remaining state-run hospital for kids with mental health problems, and they have been very, very full these last few months and have seen a lot of kids who are bouncing back, unfortunately, being readmitted within the same year.
888-WMRA-TALK, our phone number. On the line with us from Augusta County, Melanie, thank you for calling in. Your question or comment for Margaret Nimmo Crowe and or Delegate Dickie Bell, please.
Yes. I'm an intensive in-home clinician, and I work in the homes with children with behavioral problems or, you know, different diagnoses. And I've been in crisis situations where a young lady tried to jump out in front of a vehicle, and I had to protect her and myself from getting hit by a car. And I'm really glad that they've put this money in place for crisis situations. But here's the problem. They have cut multiple programs in Augusta County. Even the local CSB shut down their entire intensive in-home program. And the lack of participation in this is, it's put a lot of us in difficult situations because we don't have the access to the different, you know, treatments that we need to help these young kids in the home.
Dickie Bell, any response for Melanie?
Well, you know, it's unfortunate that those cuts take place, but we're in an economic period where some budget cuts have been necessary. We don't, as a general rule, we don't dictate to the local agencies where to cut. They, in the budget, they're specified an amount of money, and they make the decisions on where they're going to cut and where they're going to move money and what services they're going to be able to provide. It's, you know, we have to take responsibility for not being able to give them money to continue every single service at the level they'd like to fund it. There have been budget cuts that have impacted that. I won't argue that. But at the same time, we don't, from my position, we don't reach out into the localities and tell them you need to cut funding here, you need to cut it there.
Okay, we've got less than 30 seconds before we're going to lose your call.
Okay.
So I want you to end, if you would, addressing that same question I started with. What is it about mental illness challenges for children that you'd like people to know that you can sum up in 15 seconds that you think many people just don't understand?
I would say, very succinctly, just pay attention to the children. Don't assume anything. Don't think for 1 minute that some of the things that you may have a gut feeling about aren't real. They are, and we need to make sure. We need to have an awareness that these aren't the fault necessarily of parents.
This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. With me, Margaret Nimmo Crowe, Director of Policy at the group Voices for Virginia's Children, as well as coordinator of the Campaign for Children's Mental Health. And Dickie Bell got cut off as we were going to the break there. He's left us now, our delegate from Stanton, Margaret, but he was making a point that you often make.
Well, I think that it's so important for families to trust their instincts about their children and seek help when they need it. I also want to go back to a point that our caller Melanie just made about some services being cut. And I think it's really important to understand that these crisis services for which we have just gotten funding are part of a continuum. There needs to be an array of services for children's mental health. We can't expect one service in particular to cover the load for all types of situations. no more than you would for physical health. So there needs to be an array of treatment possibilities for kids.
And again, for the people who've just recently joined us, this new funding, which is about 1/6 of what you've asked for, but you see it as a start.
Absolutely.
That goes into effect in July, is for additional crisis services at the local level for
yes.
children and for psychiatric care for new
yes.
psychiatrists for children. And as you've mentioned, it's a small program that's basically a test that's going to be put in different regions of the state, and just exactly which regions hasn't been determined yet.
Exactly. But it's important to know that this is part of a continuum of everything from prevention, assessment of kids. Kids need a real thorough assessment when they first show signs of a problem, to outpatient therapy with a counselor going to an office once a week, once every 2 weeks. But that's pretty low on the intensity scale. So children who have serious mental health problems are going to need more. They may need to see a psychiatrist. They may need medication management. They may need the type of service that Melanie herself provides, which is intensive in-home services, which is several hours a week of the therapist working in the home with the child and with the family. So there's a whole array, all the way up, obviously, to hospitalization when kids are in a real serious psychiatric crisis. And so it's important to understand that these funds and the services we're talking about today are really one type of treatment in an entire spectrum that's needed for kids.
Melanie, thank you again so much for your call. Anybody else listening who wants to get in on this conversation about what priorities there should or shouldn't be for medical care for children, whether those priorities should be any different when the child's having a mental illness challenge versus any other kind of illness, 888-WMRA-TALK by phone. On Facebook, you can post to us where we are listed as Virginia Insight. From Charlottesville, Phyllis is calling us. Phyllis, thanks for doing that. Your question or comment, please.
Bravo. I'm so glad that you're speaking about this. I taught inner city Philadelphia for years, and there were so many children there who needed help. Now I'm in Charlottesville educating people on laughter and stress reduction and intuition. And one thing I want to say, everybody, whether they have a problem or they're smiling at the world, is affecting so many people. So any child with a problem, of course, is affecting the whole family, neighborhood, and the whole city, state, and they're going to grow up. So it's so important. Now, we can depend on our legislature, you know, totally. No, we can't. How can I, as an individual, give money? How can thousands of people give a few dollars to get the help that these children need? I know a family in town that has a little boy with autism, and his younger sister is fine, but they don't smile. He doesn't smile at all, and she rarely smiles. I just saw them in the car the other day. They were both smiling. I said, "What happened?" "Oh, he's on some new medicine, and it affected his sister in a way that I hugged her. It affected everybody. Thanks for what you're doing, and tell me, how can I contribute something today? To whom can I send some money? And can your people send some money as a planting seeds for all the money you're going to get to do what you're planning?" It sounds wonderful.
Oh, well, you're very nice, Phyllis. I would say two things. One, if you'd like to support advocacy efforts, our organization is Voices for Virginia's Children. You can donate online at vakids.org. Also, your local CSB, depending on if it's part of city government or not, can accept donations. That's a CSB is a community services board. They're the public mental health agency. That would be another place you could look. But certainly donations are always welcome. We're a nonprofit private agency that we take no government funds. So we're always trying to raise funds to speak out a little more. I think what you said about what families feel and siblings feel is so important. I have this testimony from a parent whose child recently has received crisis services. She's diagnosed with autism. And here's what the mom says. "I can never explain in words what it is like to realize you have a child with special needs. Mm-hmm. I felt like a failure as a mother. Mm-hmm. It is a very lonely place to be when you realize you cannot provide peace for your own child." And that speaks to that stigma and that isolation that families feel. But the message I want to get out is it's 1 in 5 kids. You're not alone. There are lots of families who are going through it. And unfortunately, because it is so difficult sometimes to navigate the system and to get services, you really do have to be an advocate for your child and for your family. You have to speak up. You have to keep going until you find what it is that your child needs. We're here, to help unite the parents and the families and the all those who care about these kids and bring this attention out into the public as we're doing today. There needs to be a lot more conversation about kids' mental health. It'd be great if we could talk about kids' mental wellness as well as kids' mental illness, but we certainly need to bring it to the attention of our policymakers, our legislators. These are kids who we cannot forget. We don't want to marginalize. And quite frankly, if you want to just talk nickel and diming, these kids are going to cost us money if we don't treat their mental health disorders. We're already paying for them in the juvenile justice system. More than 50% of the children who are incarcerated in the Virginia Department of Juvenile Justice have an untreated mental health disorder that's completely unrelated to how they got in the system to begin with. You know, we're going to pay for them that way. Children who have untreated mental health disorders are much more likely to get involved in crime. They're also much more likely to be disengaged from school and drop out. They're probably not going to be taxpaying citizens if they can't get a good job. So we pay as a society in all kinds of ways, either directly or down the line when these kids become adults, if we don't treat the underlying mental health disorders. The great news, Tom, is that when we do, these kids can recover. They can function with the mental illness as many adults do in our society. We call it recovery. They can become productive taxpaying members of society. And that's what we're going for, just like Shannon's dream for her child, Drake. She wants what every mother wants. That's what I want for my daughter, who doesn't have a mental health disorder. That's the same kind of thing we all want for our kids. And so we're working at the Campaign for Children's Mental Health to try to bring these needs to the attention of the public and to our policymakers so that these kids have just as much of a chance as any other children.
Phyllis, thank you so very much for your call. We've got a few minutes left for anybody else who wants to get in on this conversation. Phone number 888-WMRA. Talk translates in all numbers to 888-967-2825. Here with me in the studios of the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities, Margaret Nimmo Crowe, who is Director of Policy for the group Voices for Virginia's Children. Tell us why we have the situation we have, if in fact you've been able to figure it out in all these years of work that you're doing. As mentioned before, if you had a child who was in any other kind of medical crisis, who got hit on the head with a baseball, who fell and broke their leg, who developed cancer, we'd get them into a hospital and we'd get them treatment fast.
Absolutely.
Is it a matter that these disorders, autism, ADHD, bipolar for children, are not covered by insurance?
Well, there are definitely some insurance issues that are involved. Most private insurance now does cover mental health and substance use disorders, but what they cover is a limited range of services. So if you have private insurance like mine or yours, it will cover outpatient therapy, it will cover an inpatient hospital stay, and it will cover a visit to a psychiatrist for medication management, and it will cover those prescription meds. Things it will not cover usually include crisis intervention services, intensive in-home services, any sort of peer support so that you could get help from other kids and families who have those sorts of problems, which has been shown in research to be really helpful. So all of these intermediate community-based services that we know really help treat kids' mental health, there's got to be something between once a week going to talk to a therapist in her office and being admitted to an inpatient psychiatric unit. Those things in the middle typically are not covered. They are covered through Medicaid. So we've set up a system where the type of insurance that you have largely determines what is available to you. That and geography, the accident of where you happen to live. We have a state where what is available in terms of mental health treatment varies widely, from the urban parts of the state to the rural, from the city of Richmond to neighboring Henrico County. There is variation throughout. And so many times it can be an accident of where you live, what you're able to access. And that's just ridiculous. That's not the way it would be. Again, if you had a broken arm, you could go to any ER and get it fixed. So I think the important thing that we're trying to work toward as advocates is having a state where children who experience a mental health disorder can get treatment wherever they are, whoever identifies their needs, whether they be identified by the school system, whether the parent goes to the pediatrician. It shouldn't matter what door you enter to get services. You should be able to get the treatment that your child needs. I do want to let you know there are some exciting things that are happening in Virginia. Just as it's spotty what is available, there are some places who are doing some really great things. And some of them are maybe places that those of us who live in the, you know, the central part of the state wouldn't expect. Lee, Scott, and Wise counties in far southwest Virginia have some really great mobile crisis services that are going on that are actually a model for the rest of the state. I just heard a presentation about them at a conference this spring. They have been able, with some seed money they got from the General Assembly a few years ago, they have been able to start up a mobile crisis team that can go into the child's home, into the school, and work with that child for up to about 2 weeks of really intensive services to get things on track. They go in when the child's in crisis, and it doesn't matter whether the child is with their biological parents or in a foster home. They can go in, they can calm the situation down, and they put all the pieces in place. They sort of peel back the layers, find out why this family got in crisis this time, and try and solve those sorts of problems. One of the things they presented that I thought was so helpful is, you know, you can get things on track in one setting and like home. You get all the pieces in place and things are running more smoothly at home. But if your child's still acting out at school and ends up getting suspended, you haven't gotten where you needed to go. And so this team can intervene in any type of situation. They can go into the school, put things in place so that the child is not acting out. Here's an example. A child who has trouble focusing may have somewhere on the autism spectrum. That therapist can figure out what things in the classroom are triggering the child to act out, can come up with some alternatives if they need to step out of the room for a while, if they need to have something to manipulate in their hands to get through a stressful time in the classroom. Whatever it is, clinicians have all kinds of tools they can use to help manage those situations. Those are the things we can easily put in place if we have the resources to do it and keep kids out of the hospital. I think that's just such an important message, that there are programs that work. There are a few places in Virginia that have been able to start them, and what we're trying to do is expand that around the state.
Emily in Churchville, thank you for calling us here on Virginia Insight. We're running short on time, Emily, so if you could make your comment or question a quick one, please.
I was just wondering what intentions these programs might have to stress the importance of at least trying homeopathic remedies for mental illnesses first. I mean, just with the knowledge of the common side effects that come with regular prescription drugs, but also if there was any intent to stress the effects of diet on children's mental illnesses. There's a lot of research recently just showing how much junk we take in our bodies just through our food affects how we think.
You know, I think that's a really good question, because the issue of prescription drugs for kids is huge. I can't tell you that there's anything specific written into the budget language about homeopathic remedies, but I think that there is a tremendous amount of attention being paid to when we medicate children, what the pros and cons are. And certainly that's part of why it's so important to have that access to a trained child psychiatrist. That's part of what this new money will be used for, so that you're not getting prescribed medicine, your child's not getting prescribed medicine from a pediatrician or some other health professional who really doesn't have the training in child psychiatry. So I think that's one piece of addressing what you're talking about. And then I think it's really going to be up to the localities, the types of services that they put in place. This money, the budget language is specific, but also broad enough so that the regions of the state that end up getting this money can do what they think will meet the need for the kids in their area.
Emily, thank you so very much for your call. We're just about out of time, Margaret Nimmo Crow. So let me go back to the kind of question that I was trying to get Shannon to answer, and to some extent, Delegate Bell to answer. You've been doing the kind of work you're doing now for a long time. I mean, you started as a volunteer with different agencies. Now you're doing it full time as paid staff, although you're certainly not getting rich working for this nonprofit. Voices for Virginia's Children. What do you dream about in terms of end result on these issues that we've been discussing?
Well, I think it's probably unlikely that we're going to wipe out mental illness. So I would have to say that my goal is that all children in Virginia who experience mental health problems are able to access treatment wherever they live, that there is no stigma for them and for their parents, their family members. It's no worse to go get help for a mental health disorder than it is for any physical health disorder.
If you could magically remove that stigma overnight, would everything else change?
Absolutely. And I think that's why at Voices for Virginia's Children, we put such a strong emphasis on having families speak out and tell their stories. I think that is the way that we cut down the stigma, because we start seeing that it's people just like you and me, Tom, who have kids with mental health challenges. They're no different. They haven't done anything. Their children haven't done anything to deserve this. And the more we hear about that, the more we hear that treatment works, that there's something we can do to help these children grow up and be productive members of society, I think it begins, the solutions begin to fall in place. I think people will understand there's something we can do, and they will start taking that action.
Our guest has been Margaret Nimmo Crowe, coordinator of the Children's Campaign for Mental Health, as well as director of policy for the nonprofit advocacy group Voices for Virginia's Children. And earlier in the program, House of Delegates member from Stanton, Dickie Bell, and parent advocate from Central Virginia, Shannon. Margaret, thanks so much for making time for us.
Thank you, Tom.
You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on Programs, and then clicking on Virginia Insight. And if you go to that page, you will find links to more information about our guests. Insight's executive producers Matt Bingay, our associate producer Bob Levicky, and Terry Ward. We had extra help today from Sarah McConnell, Elliot Majerzik, and Andrew Windham at the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.